Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And I am just issuing a warning. If Kevin Durant is anywhere near you, hide all of your daggers, because that's all he can do. Hit dagger upon dagger upon dagger.
Of course, he will find your daggers.
He will find your daggers. Hide all of your kitchen utensils. Of course, I am talking about Kevin Durant deciding to go super sane in Game 3. And exploding to give the Golden State Warriors a 110-102 victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers to take a 3-0 lead. Tyler, we are recording a literal 15 minutes after this game is over, and we are just going to go ahead and jump right in. Kevin Durant, 43 points, 13 rebounds, and 7 assists on the night. But probably the most important shot was the deep three-pointer. I'm talking maybe like a 31, 32 footer. A deep three to put the Cavs put the Warriors up 6. At that point, it was a 1-point game, a 2-point game, a three-point game max throughout the entire third and fourth quarter. It was close. I saw the second half when I got home from work. It was close. It was a great game. And Kevin Durant said, "I think it's time to go home," and hit a huge dagger to put him up 6 and just put the game out of reach with a minute left. Tyler, what is your takeaway from this game 3 in the NBA Finals where Golden State took a 3-0 lead?
To me, it just proves that the margin of error when facing Golden State is just so slim.
If there's even a margin of error.
I mean, every team is beatable, but this team it's so hard because even when they have off nights, like Steph Curry was 1-for-10 from 3.
Yeah, Curry.
That's insane.
Curry finished with 11 points.
Yeah, I mean, and the only three that he had was an important three late in the game. Mm-hmm. And even when that happens, you still got Klay Thompson and you still got Kevin Durant going off for what was he? How many points did he have?
43, Tyler.
43 points.
It's a playoff career high for Kevin Durant. A postseason career high. Let me rephrase that for Kevin Durant.
I mean, it's just insane that like they can. At certain points of the game, I didn't even think the Warriors were even playing that well.
I agree. I only watched the second half, but throughout the beginning, well, let's rewind a bit. We started at the end of the game with a dagger three, but let's rewind to the beginning of the fourth quarter and the end of the third quarter when, surprisingly, you had Rodney Hood coming off the bench and having a very productive game. He had 15 points on 26 minutes. He went 7-for-11 from the field. He had an outstanding game. And if you look at the Cleveland box score, I mean, they got productivity from the guys that they needed from. LeBron had 33, 11, and 10. He had a triple-double. Kevin Love had 20 points and 13 rebounds. J.R. Smith had 13 points. Granted, he went 5-for-14, but still. And then Rodney Hood coming off the bench, 15 points, 7-for-11 from shooting on only 26 minutes. Like, the Cavs did everything right. And even on the night where the Cavs pretty much did. I mean, yes, they could have gotten a little bit more from Tristan Thompson. He only had 8 points on 34 minutes. Kyle Korver could have gotten off the bench. Larry Nance Jr. could have done more. They're dealing with this roster is a C+ with LeBron, and without it is probably a D-. And I'm only bumping the grade up because it's LeBron James, you know? It's like when you do something really good in high school and your teacher's like, "That's worth bumping you up a letter grade." LeBron is worth bumping you up a letter grade, you know? Even on a night when the Cavs delivered, granted, relatively better than before, Golden State had a night where Kevin Durant said, "You know what? I'm going to take over and score 43 points." Their other starters, Draymond had 10, JaVale McGee had 10 points. He went 5-for-7 though. Granted, JaVale McGee played 14 minutes and went 5-for-7 for 10 points. Steph, like we alluded to earlier, only 11 points. Klay Thompson, 10 points. Andre Iguodala, back from injury, 8 points. He went 3-for-4, and he was strong on the defensive side of the ball at the end.
Yeah, I feel his impact was very defensive because you didn't offer a lot offensively, but like you could tell that they were much better when he was on the court defensively.
Yeah, agreed. Which you can
help neutralize the home court advantage that Cleveland had.
Exactly. And you can also do it on the flip side. Yes, Rodney Hood had an outstanding game offensively, but defensively, that man was a liability. That man was Ryan Gosling in Remember the Titans level liability.
Absolute liability.
Yeah, and if you don't know what we're talking about, it's required watching for any sports fan. You got to watch Remember the Titans. And just watch. Ryan Gosland is a defensive liability in the secondary. He should not have been starting at cornerback. But yeah, it gave me flashes of that. Like, that's just the big takeaway for me, that even on a night when Cleveland did a relatively good job and they kept the game close, LeBron, it's crazy to say that LeBron on a night when he had triple-double, had 33, 11, and 10, I felt like LeBron slacked a little bit.
I think he did play a lot hurt. You didn't see the first half, but he did roll his ankle in the first half.
Also, he's kind of half blind in one eye, apparently. Draymond rake weird from game one is too. Still bothering him, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Supernatural, but in that show, there's this thing called the Crossroads Demon that has, like, completely red eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And, red eyes and the black pupils.
Mm-hmm.
He looked like that.
So LeBron is one of those demons now?
Apparently.
LeBron's one of those demons if those demons could drop 44 points any given night on you.
It's just... he's just playing hurt on a bad roster, and like they're still coming close. So that means it says a lot about him. But this Warriors roster is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked about this with a friend today. Is that on top of them just being such a great roster, I think that they've got a good coach for them, and that Steve Kerr doesn't do too much, but he does what they need him to.
Right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
He just makes the little adjustments and things like that, and just this team is so good even when they don't even look like they're that good.
Agreed. On and off, because the thing is, you typically have your one superstar where a superstar can win you a game, a la LeBron James winning the Cavs multiple games this season. But the thing with the Warriors is, okay, Steph is off, cool, we got KD. Oh, they're both not playing, Klay Thompson can drop 30 points in a quarter. Oh, if that doesn't happen, Draymond can have a triple-double and be a defensive freak. You know, it doesn't matter. Oh, what happens? Andre Iguodala comes off the bench, or he usually starts, but, you know, he's coming back from injury. They have everyone they could possibly have. Tyler, with that being said, I feel like, here's the question. Is it Warriors in four, or is it Warriors in five? Because there's no way that the Cavs win two games.
I have to stick to my guns and say that it's Warriors in five.
Mm-hmm.
Just because even I just don't believe that LeBron can get swept.
Yeah, neither do I at all. I feel like it's banking on LeBron to get swept. LeBron hasn't been swept since 07 when he lost to the Spurs on that team that people didn't really give any credit to be 1,000% honest. But I don't see a way where LeBron at home, game four, his legacy, having arguably one of the greatest seasons of his career so far, I just don't see a way where he can lose and he can get swept. Let me rephrase that, where he can get swept. I feel like they'll take it back. I feel like the Cavs will take game four, and then they'll head back to San Francisco at the Oracle, and then they'll just kind of take care of business, because that's exactly what the Warriors do, you know?
Yeah. An amazing thing to me about the whole situation, though, is just how quickly after the game, the tweets about where LeBron is on Friday night at Cleveland, like the last game he ever plays for Cleveland.
See, now, I've been staying off of Twitter during the games this postseason simply because where I am, I don't have a television, so I'm watching everything on my laptop, which gives me a delay on everything. So I kind of want to watch things in real time, you know. So
yeah.
What were people saying on Twitter, since I did not know about this? This is the first time I'm hearing about it. What was the consensus? What were people saying?
Well, it was actually interesting because, like, not even many people were even giving a take on it. Their whole take was just that, wow, we already got here. It was, so many people were like, I forget who posted it, but it was like a major Twitter handle that posted, like, is Friday night's Cavs home game the last game LeBron plays for Cleveland? So many people were like, I can't even deal with this right now. Please stop.
Well, that's Cleveland fans for you. Okay, my last thing that I want to talk about here, because this will be a relatively quicker pod than normal. It's late. We both got things to do tomorrow. My last thing is, who do you think wins MVP of the series? Now, I'm asking this before a possible sweep, simply because I'm not sure that you can completely say that someone on the Warriors is 100% deserving, which leads me to believe, could we see the MVP going to LeBron James, even though they're more than likely going to lose the series?
That's interesting. I think that there is a possibility for that, but I just, I don't know. Historically, has that ever happened before? Has a Finals MVP ever gone to a team, to a person who on the losing team?
I do not believe so. I think it has happened, and I'm fully immersed in soccer right now because the World Cup starts next week. But in the 2014 World Cup, the Golden Ball, which is the MVP of the tournament, basically went to Lionel Messi, and it was kind of ironic because Germany had just beaten Argentina in the final, so they're giving out the awards and stuff, and then Messi has to go up there as the loser, receive the award, and he literally grabbed the trophy, picked it up, and walked away. And he had his like silver medal on, and as he walked off the stage, he took off the medal and just gave the trophy to people. Like he clearly did not care about that. He wanted the World Cup trophy over everything. So I do know precedents in that where people have given the MVP of a whole tournament to a player on the losing team in the final, but I don't know about in the, like in the NFL, like is the Super Bowl MVP a defensive player that had three interceptions on the losing team in a one possession game? You know, like I don't know about if there's any ever been precedent. Sideline Judgments statistic department currently searching for people. We currently have.
Yeah, I've been working on it, I currently can't find anybody.
Yeah. So if anyone out there wants to work for free for Sideline Judgment as a statistic person, the position is open. We are listening to all. Send your CV over to sidelinejudgment@gmail.com. it was something that came up to me because LeBron is averaging something like 35 points in these three games. It's one of those things where if – I feel like maybe not this year, but simply because they're going to either get swept or lose in five. But the year that the Cavs won in 2015, was it 15 or 16? It was 16. In 2016, the year that the Cavs won, LeBron led every single player on the floor in every statistical category. So I feel like if Golden State won Game 7 by like one or two possessions, then they would have given it to LeBron, you know?
Yeah, that's possible. So. I mean, I think he'd be deserving. I just don't know.
I agree.
Like, but you got to think because it's a voted upon award.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. You said that there was no precedent. But what if LeBron James is a player that can set the precedent.
Yeah, but you know? It's a matter of I feel like the people voting on it will have it so stuck in their mind that they'll need to give it the best and the winning team.
Yeah, I see that.
That's what they're going to do. I think, honestly, I would say that he would deserve it. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even finished the series, and I feel like at this point, no matter what happens, I feel like he would deserve it because he is the most valuable player.
Completely agree.
I mean, what happened tonight with Steph completely legitimizes that to me because for the first two games, Steph looked like he was the Finals MVP.
Well, now you have
guy if they won.
Well, now you have Kevin Durant single-handedly winning them Game 3 on the road.
Which is what I mean. Like, and it shows that while I personally think that Curry is an extremely valuable part of the Warriors, he is not as valuable to them as LeBron James is to the Cavaliers.
Agreed. So let me ask you this question. So let's take away LeBron in the MVP discussion. Who's your Finals MVP as of right now?
I think it has to go to Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm. Is that a recency bias because of this game, or is that what you think overall?
Part of it is, but I wanted to say that it was Steph in the first two games, but the issue that you have to come up with is that Steph basically disappeared in Game 3, and he was dominant in the first two games. The issue, even when he was dominant, Kevin Durant still had like 27 points at least.
Right.
I don't think I think there's a stat out there that says Kevin Durant has never scored less than like 26 or 27 points in any Finals game he's ever been in.
That's crazy.
And so like even he went off for 43 tonight in Game 3, but even when he was the MVP front runner in the first two games, he was still getting off like 30 points a game.
Right.
It was just not as spectacular as Steph's.
Well, it wasn't it wasn't one of those flashy third quarters that we've seen from Steph all season.
So it's a matter of just the floor of his performance is higher than Steph's, I guess. So when you look at the whole resume, I feel like it boosts Durant more, which is weird because I do actually feel like as a player, Steph is more valuable to the Warriors than Durant.
I think because of the style they play, I agree. But Kevin Durant is a player that can take over at any point, you know?
Personal
he has
opinion.
that clutch he has that clutch gene. Kevin Durant has that clutch gene, you know? I'm looking right now before we move on. Bleacher Report just put out one of those push alerts and says NBA Twitter praises KD. And not NBA Twitter, like the fans and the reporters, like players. Dwayne Wade tweeting, my goodness, Jeff Van Gundy voice. Joel Embiid tweeting, KD is not nice. Mike Conley just tweeting, clutch. Manu Ginobili putting KD and then one of the emojis of putting your hand on your face. Paul Pierce, wow. CJ McCollum, KD's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest ever. Jamal Crawford, KD put on a clinic. Jay Williams, Van Gundy couldn't have said it better. KD putting the kids to sleep. Like every Marcus Morris, how? Like just off of that, like when you get that reaction from your peers and your colleagues, it reflects into the voters. So I'm gonna have to agree with you. I think right now my MVP is Kevin Durant.
Yeah. I mean, to go off what I was saying earlier with like just that, like, it is a matter of who they are identity wise as a team. But for this moment, for the clutch factor, which is what matters for the finals MVP, Kevin Durant has shown up for that more.
Right.
Because he's just the player that can take over a game. So, and that's what matters when you're voting for finals MVP. So,
yeah, you need that. You need that as a championship team. You need those players. All right, anything else to say about the finals? We both have it to be Golden State in five. So Friday at 9 o'clock Eastern time on ABC is game four. We think LeBron's going to be able to win a game.
The thing I will praise this finals over last year's is that as much as the Warriors have kind of been dominant, I think overall the basketball quality has been a lot greater this year.
I agree.
In these games, like, they are actually fun to watch.
Yeah, and this is a series where in game one you had probably one of the best finals games that I've seen, period, in game one. Like, it was ridiculous. I haven't been glued to the screen on a finals game since honestly since that game six in 2011 or in 2012 when we played the Spurs and Ray Allen hit that shot. Game one was crazy. It had the narratives too. Game two was Golden State putting on a clinic and coming back. Steph Curry breaking the single game record for three-pointers in a final series with 9 three-pointers. And then tonight was a competitive game on both sides of the floor. KD went on for 43. It's good basketball. It's high-quality basketball, and I'm very happy with that.
Yep.
All right, cool. So we're going to be go ahead and moving on. We're going to go into one of our favorite segments. What do we got here? We got tweets we've shared with Sergio and Tyler. Tyler, do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Go first, Tyler.
So my this comes off the heels of what happened in game one, where J.R. Smith kind of screwed the team over, because he denies this, but I fully believe it. But
there's video evidence.
He thought that they were ahead.
Like, you don't need to be an expert lip reader to see that he said, "I thought we were ahead."
Yeah, so he basically cost them the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you sent me a tweet that was of a play that I didn't even know happened, but it was by Darren Revell. And it said, "Friend, colon, how could JR not know the score? Me, colon, this is the guy who, during one game, forgot he was in the game." And it's just a video of him versus the Milwaukee Bucks going over to like, say hi to a player on the bench. And then forgetting he was supposed to guard somebody.
He was on the floor. It's not like he was a bench player and they were by the bench and he was saying what's up to another bench person. No, he was one of the five guys on the floor. And the funny thing is, you see like Rodney Hood and Tristan Thompson look at him like, "Dog, what are you doing?"
For real though, I love that the Bucks player like straight up went up to him and was like playing with it. Because he was like, yes, I will get you off the
board. That is Jason Terry, my friend. He's like 41 years old. That is a veteran move by Jason Terry.
What's great too.
That's a play that doesn't show up in the stat sheet.
What's great too is you watch the video. Another Bucks player, I can't see who it was. They get up and they're just like shaking Jason Terry's hand. They're like, "You're such a smart person."
Oh my god! One of my favorite ones. This is not one of the tweets I shared, but one of my favorite ones was I forgot who tweeted it. I can't give proper credit. I'm so sorry. But someone put the video and it said, "JR thought we were playing 21 and had to take it back." And then another one was just like, oh, I thought we had to take it back. Oh, man.
For real, though.
Great quality. Great quality we're working with. Okay, my tweet of the week is a more recent one and on a different topic. I wanted to kind of expand our conversation since it is a shorter episode. It is by John Heyman, and it is literally the most recent tweet you have sent me. You sent it to me tonight at 7:13. It is now 12:11 a.m. And it is by John Heyman, and he says, Kyler Murray and the A's have a deal that guarantees him close to $5 million and also allows him to play football. Parentheses. He's a quarterback and could be Baker Mayfield's replacement, close parentheses, at Oklahoma for 1 year. Now, we had been texting about this certain situation. For those who don't know, Kyler Murray is a redshirt freshman at the University of Oklahoma, and he is set to be the replacement for Baker Mayfield. He is a running dual-threat quarterback. He played a little bit over the season. He was that secondary, that option quarterback when Baker's like helmet came off, or he like had like some kind of quick injury in the Rose Bowl. He came in for like 3-4 plays and did relatively well, you know, on a big stage in the Rose Bowl. He also is a baseball player for the University of Oklahoma's baseball team, and he was drafted 9th overall in the first round of the draft by the A's, and it was rumored to be somewhere like $4.2 million, something like that. And Tyler and I are screaming, bro, take the money.
Take that money, man.
This is baseball. It's fully guaranteed contracts. You don't have to deal with the injuries of that football can give you. And if you're that good, fully guaranteed, and there's no salary cap. If someone says you're worth $500 million, you get paid $500 million. Like, go and get your money. And so this was a very interesting tweet, just because it's cool because he gets to play football for the year. The A's don't want to lose the prospect, and they're paying him to go play football for 1 year and then end up going back to the A's later. I have two questions on this. Number one, who is your agent and how can I be represented by him? Because that man finessed. Number two.
For real.
Number two, does this affect his NCAA eligibility?
I don't believe it will, because if they structure it in a way that he doesn't actually make anything until like after he's done, then likelihood I mean I feel like the first time that this came out, I was like, the NCAA is going to have a field day.
Oh yeah. This out. Oh, 100%.
I feel like if the agents structure it in a way that he won't be actually receiving any money until much later, then I think they'll be fine with it.
So basically like delaying the contract until after football season?
Yeah, because I don't feel like the NCAA can say, like, if you have a job lined up while you're a college athlete regarding another sport, but you haven't signed anything, then I feel like you can't get in trouble for receiving improper benefits if you haven't received the improper benefits.
I see what you mean. There is no speculation punishment.
Yeah, you can't.
Got it.
There's no proactive punishment for this.
Okay.
So I feel like, I mean, I don't know what the ruling is going to be on it. I feel like for baseball, I feel like it will be, I don't know, because it bleeds into football money, it might be weird, because the thing is baseball is not necessarily a revenue sport.
Right.
College baseball isn't. The NCAA is not going to, I feel, is not going to prioritize it as much.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, we all know the NCAA isn't really out for the players' best interest. They just want to see how much money they can make and stuff. Okay, well, that's a good way to put it. I thought when I first read it was that he was going to forego his baseball eligibility but maintain his football eligibility because he's technically not a professional football player. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think he'd be fine with that.
I think so too.
And I honestly think that this is for career wise, this is a smart decision for him. He clearly wants to play football, but I think it's a smart to not pursue that because, I mean, as everything that Kyler Murray's career, both when he was originally at Texas A&M and now when he's at Oklahoma, is that he's the type of quarterback that's very improvisational, but not necessarily like a gifted passer.
Right.
And like maybe he could develop into one, but I don't see him as a good prospect for the NFL at the quarterback position. And if you are good enough to be drafted 9th overall in the Major League Baseball draft,
go.
Then you take that money.
You take it. My thing is, fully guaranteed contracts. You don't have to put that strain on your body. And there's no salary cap. To me, it's a no-brainer.
I mean, I agree.
Then again, we also don't know how much this kid just wants to play football, or this guy, you know. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Again, he went through spring practice and everything. I feel like he's just given so much to it that it's like, I got to play one season.
Which, you know, I respect. And honestly, again, shout out to your agent, man, or to whoever it is that's orchestrating these deals, because technically you can't have an agent, but whatever.
Yeah, for real.
Way to go. They literally secured the bag. Literally secured the bag.
Quite literally.
Now, bonus mention here we're going to put in this section. We have some updates on the Zaxby's drop in the bag. We told you guys last
week. Important investigative updates.
Big mood coming through. We told you guys last week about how Marco Wilson tweeted that Chick-fil-A was trash. And we speculated that it was going to be Zaxby's coming in and dropping a bag. And we have confirmation. Tyler, can you give us that confirmation? Because you were the one that broke this news to me.
Yeah, so it appears that Nick Smith, a linebacker for the Florida Gators, who also came in the same class as Marco Wilson. Internet is really slow. I want to get this wording exactly right.
Go ahead, give it to me.
All right, but and he tweeted, better than Chick-fil-A, what's up?
Tyler, can you repeat that real quick so we get clarity?
Nick Smith, he actually tweeted this, because apparently he believes this. Zaxby's is better than Chick-fil-A, what's up?
Now, does he believe this, or is there a bag being dropped? Dun, dun, dun!
See, that is the question that we ask here. But also another question, does it matter if he believes this? Because we got to figure out, was the bag dropped?
Exactly. We need to find out.
Was it dropped successfully?
Exactly. Like, is this like in Call of Duty where you get a care package and they pinpoint down here? Or is this some slick stuff where they're going into the dorms and just kind of sliding some stuff in? Maybe my guys over there are getting free Zaxby's without us knowing, you know?
Is this like a singular case?
Exactly. Are these one-off things?
Individual case, or is it the whole class? Was it that recruiting class? Is it all the defensive players? Is Popeyes involved now?
What is going on? And here's the question. If we see Zaxby's become a sponsor of Florida football within the next 3 years, it's over. It's over. If we get an alert, or if you walk into the swamp game one, and all of a sudden you're in the press box, and you see a platter of Zaxby's tenders, I need a picture, and we need to go in on this.
For real. You've been a part of this story since day one.
Since day one. I didn't think we'd get updates so soon.
I didn't, yeah. I just thought the trail was going to go cold.
You know what we need? You know what we need?
This is sloppy Bagman work.
This is horrible Bagman work. We need to find a way to interview Marco Wilson. And who else was it? Who was the linebacker?
Nick Smith.
And Nick Smith. We need to sit them down and we need to say, listen, gentlemen, what is the deal here? All right? We will use you. And the thing is, oh, great. It doesn't work now. I was going to say we would make them anonymous. But now, you know, we've recorded it on our podcast. But we'll find a way. We'll get some information. We'll talk to some Florida football players that may be close to the situation and try to figure out what is going on here.
Yeah, we won't talk to CJ Henderson because he doesn't talk ever.
To anyone.
He's
the epitome of letting his play do the talking because he doesn't talk.
Yeah, basically.
Anyway.
We're going to find this out.
So that was just an extra one that we thought. The Sideline Judgment Investigative Bureau is on it, hitting the trail. So we will have our eyes peeled to Twitter and our ears posted to see what happens. We're going to go ahead and move on, Tyler. Just real quick, though, talk about the Stanley Cup Finals. Game 4 is tomorrow night, Thursday at 8 p.m. on NBC. But on Tuesday was Game 4. Sorry, Game 5 is tomorrow night. I apologize. Was Game 4. and Washington beat Vegas 6-2. Now, here's my little small takeaway. Tyler, did you see this game?
I saw some of it.
Okay, I saw the entire thing. Listen to me when I tell you. Remember game 6 and game 7, or was it game, remember game 7 of the Tampa Bay Washington series, where we said that Washington kind of absorbed a bunch of pressure and then counterattacked really well?
Yes.
Literally the same thing. Vegas in the first period, at least the first 10, 12 minutes, were just bombarding Washington. And the Washington goalie, Holtby, did an outstanding job. He had 30 saves in the game. And then the three goals were just quick counterattacks. One was a power play goal, and two were just quick counterattacks. They were up 3-0 at the end of the first period. Now, again, we don't know much hockey. This is our kind of introduction into hockey. But right now it's looking like Washington is going to take the Stanley Cup back to Washington, D.C. area. And that's actually really good for that community and that group, because Washington has been kind of plagued without having championships and titles for a very long time. So
Very true.
That was my little Stanley Cup Finals update. Go ahead and watch Game 5, the decisive game. I'm predicting that Vegas wins Game 5 because they're back in Vegas, and there's that cross-country flight. They'll be at home. Apparently, they have, like, a casino inside their arena. They have, like, Cirque du Soleil before the show or something, before the game. So it'll be an entertaining time, and I think Vegas will use that momentum and win, because they were playing really well in the beginning of the game, and you just kind of saw the life get sucked out of them. But then I think Game 6, Washington goes back and wins in Washington and wins the cup at home, I think. But yeah, anything you want to say about Stanley Cup or what you've seen so far?
Yeah, just really that it feels like the energy has kind of come out of Vegas. Like, mm-hmm. they've just spent so much getting to this moment.
Right.
And it's like the Caps have just kind of I don't know how to put into words, but it's just like the Caps have just gone the extra measure.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas has just put so much energy into getting to this point that they don't have enough to win it.
Yeah, it's the Bill Simmons theory of celebrating too early.
Yeah.
We saw it with the Vikings last year in the NFL playoffs, and we've seen it time and time again when teams beat these juggernauts in the playoffs, and then they realize, oh, shoot, we have another series that we have to play. I feel like that's how it kind of is right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with Marc-Andre Fleury, the Vegas goalie. He's not been playing well.
At all. He has not.
And he was such a huge part of them, of how well they've been playing.
Yeah, you can just see maybe he's mentally gassed, you know?
That's entirely possible.
So, I kind of relate it, last little thing, I relate this Washington Capitals team to the Portugal soccer team from the Euros in 2016, where they were sat back very defensive and then counterattacked, but were just clinical when they did. In the games that I've seen Washington play these playoffs, that's exactly how I feel it. They just sit back and counterattack, you know?
Yep.
So that is your update on the Stanley Cup playoffs. And then Tyler, I think we just got moments of the week before we go. You went first on tweets, so I'm going to go ahead and go first on moments of the week. My moments of the week are threefold, and I apologize, but I got to do it. It is the week before the World Cup, and I got to put the shout out there. Number one is shout out to Paolo Guerrero, who is a 31-year-old striker for the Peruvian national team. He was finally cleared to play for the national team. For those that don't know, he had been serving an 18-month doping suspension across all sport. Now, there were traces of cocaine that were found in his testing sample after the games. But what happens in Peru and in other countries in the Amazon that are up high, they take the cocaine leaf and they make a tea out of it that makes it very soothing and stuff. Now, Paolo, being a very intelligent and prominent athlete, knows that if he drinks that tea, there will be traces of cocaine. So what happened was, it must have been someone that didn't clean the teapot properly. He had a different type of tea, or he drank from a cup that had used it before, and there were traces found in his system. Now, we know this to be true because when you take the test and of how much was found, it is physically impossible for him to have done cocaine and then come up with that little amount. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm very happy. He's a great addition to the Peruvian national team. He is the captain. He's the goal scorer. And on his first game back in a friendly against Saudi Arabia and Switzerland, he scores two goals in a 3-0 victory. And I'm just pumped. I'm very excited for Peru. Very excited for Peru in this World Cup. But we will have more about that next week. Another part was also that the World Cup squads were announced. And Leroy Sané, who is a winger for Manchester City, was left off of the Germany team. Now, Germany has a lot of great talent, and we know them to be kind of the Alabama of soccer. But him being excluded was ridiculous. He won Young Player of the Year in England on Manchester City, which is one of those record-breaking teams. So that was a big, 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 big surprise, a big omission. And then my third one, I had it in my brain, but I forgot it. It was more positive.
I was about to say, you've ended this on really crappy note.
No, I just had it.
Is it just that the World Cup is almost here?
No, because we're going to have a whole World Cup episode coming up next week. You guys will have it sometime next week before the World Cup begins on June 14th. A little promo there. But Tyler, why don't you go ahead and give us your moment of the week, and then I will kind of just jog my memory and see if I can remember that third one.
Yeah. Since this is a short episode, and I'm going to kind of have like a twofold one.
Go ahead, buddy.
But a big one is that Johnny Football got back onto the football field.
Yes, he did. In style, my friend.
In style. He played in the preseason game for the CFL Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mm-hmm. And he looked good. He looked very good. Which leads me to just kind of preview something that I'm going to throw in randomly in the next week or two. Mm-hmm. My little CFL Appreciation Week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be coming up this summer. Tyler's going to go ahead and give us an update and give us why he believes the CFL is worth watching.
It is very worth watching. But that I digress. Yeah, but it's good to see Johnny Football back on the football field mm-hmm. playing. He's fun to watch. He still plays just the way he did before. Love so whether it. You hate that, I love that.
It's good to see a guy go through so much and then come back and have his head on straight. As someone who's gone through depression and through anxiety, which I know were some of the things that he's gone through. I know he's bipolar. But it's good to see people go through those kind of mental things and to come out on the good end, you know? Like maybe wasn't as fast as people thought. It took maybe a little bit longer than anticipated. But he's back on the football field, you know? He may not be starting in the NFL, but he's playing, you know? And we know how important that is to him.
I'm happy for him that he's overcome a lot to come back from from everything.
I am very happy for him too. What was your second part?
My second part was that the Florida State Seminoles softball team won their mm-hmm. first ever national championship this past week
for the Women's
College World Series. Which I mean, I guess I have to say congratulations.
Do we have to? Yeah, no, we do. We're taking the journalistic approach here. Congratulations to the Florida State softball team.
I'm here for the narrative.
Yeah, I am here too. I am here for the narrative. And honestly, now that Florida State has that kind of pedigree, that championship pedigree, it improves our rivalry. It's more fun.
You know? It injects new life into it because both teams have been good. But so this also comes on the backs of Tim Walton, the head coach for the Florida Gators softball team, just got a 10-year extension.
Yes, he did, which is a tweet I sent you.
Yes, that is. Look at us. But yeah, I remember seeing a stat that he in his time at Florida has amassed like 772 wins.
Ridiculous.
Which is like an 80% winning percentage. He's in like the 10 years he's been here, he's been to the Women's College World Series like 9 times or something ridiculous like that.
It's insane.
He Florida is one of the best softball programs in the country. He's had 2 national championships, multiple national championship appearances beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And to see Florida State get that on that pedigree, mm-hmm. on that level, just injects new lifeblood into the rivalry.
Yeah, very happy with that.
So it'll be fun to watch going forward.
Yes, I agree.
But, yeah.
You know, but that con- you
also,
know what
fun
that-
fact.
Yeah, fun fact.
I believe that Tim Walton is an Oklahoma grad.
Boomer.
Not saying it.
Cool, that's fine. I'll say it sooner. Yes. But yes, like you said, congratulations. Makes our rivalry a lot more fun. Gives it more blood, you know? It's not fun when your rivals are always losing and pounding on them. You know, you want that competition. It's the way it goes.
Yep.
I remembered my other one.
Ooh.
It is Zinedine Zidane stepped down as the Real Madrid head coach. This is after winning back-to-back-to-back European Champions League titles. And honestly, it's a feeling of Florentino Perez is the president of Real Madrid, and it's kind of like his baby. And he's known for turning over players and wanting star players and, you know, buying the best and stuff. And they haven't really done that over the past 3 years. Madrid's just kind of worked with this one group of players and has kind of drilled them in and turned them into what they are. And I feel like Zidane was like, you know what? No, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to do that. And there's also now leads rumors to Zinedine Zidane managing the French national team after this coming World Cup, maybe. So
ooh.
Those are cool things. We're going to go ahead and wrap the show up with just a little preview of next week's episode, which is our World Cup preview, which, Tyler, I am so excited for. I'm currently wearing my Colombia national team jersey today. This is my outfit of the day. So this was
I'm excited for this.
I'm very excited. Well, here's what I want to tell the listeners, what I plan on doing. So I want to go through every single group, and I want to give you a bold prediction in every single group. And then, Tyler, I want to go ahead and ask you, and we're going to go through and create our own little sideline judgment bracket. We're going to have to agree on these picks and make our own little bracket as to who we think will advance in the groups and then how that knockout round stage goes. I also will give you kind of some players to keep an eye on teams that you may not expect. I'll give you the cool narratives as to what's happening. It'll be a full-fledged preview. I am very, 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 very excited for this episode. This is my child, my baby. Today I read an article on theringer.com about the U.S. bowing out, kind of like what happened that caused the U.S. to not make the World Cup. And it was the perfect closure I needed before the World Cup starts so that I could be fresh. It was like calling an ex that you ended poorly and just kind of finally realizing what happened and just being open with each other. And I was like, oh, okay, I got that closure. I can finally move on. This is how I feel. I'm excited. We start next Thursday, Russia. I'm pumped, man. I'm so pumped. I'm so pumped for the World Cup. This is my thing, man.
I'm excited for this World Cup.
I can't wait.
This only happens once every four years. Yes. So like,
this is the biggest sporting event on earth. I'm sorry, Olympics, but this is the biggest event on earth. It is an earlier watch time for us. Most of the games are going to start at 7 a.m. because it's out in Russia. But you know darn well that my alarm will be set and I will be up watching these games.
You know, yeah. You actually know how many times that I wish I could wake up at like 7 or 8 in the morning and there be a sporting event on.
Right? Yeah, don't you? You want that feeling. That's part of why I liked, you know, like the Beijing Olympics.
Yeah.
I didn't mind having breakfast watching javelin, you know, or watching the swimming from the night before.
This is why, like, as far as like when football is concerned and everything, part of me is jealous of people on the West Coast in the sense of like,
yeah,
you can just wake up at 9 a.m. and there's stuff on.
Yeah, I agree. My aunts live out in Seattle, and one of my aunts is a huge Dolphin fan. And she wakes up at like 8 in the morning, gets breakfast ready, whatever, up, and has like a brunch every Sunday watching the Dolphins at 10 a.m. It's great.
Then you get to go do stuff. It's great. Like, I wish more sporting events happened in the morning.
Yeah. And then, like, the primetime stuff. My one thing is that, like, an 8 o'clock primetime game starts at 5. So maybe you work till, like, 6 and you miss a bit. But honestly, like, I'd rather it end, like, at 8:30. And then it's like, cool, I'll take a shower. I'll take a shower. I'll watch an episode or two of television. And then I'm in bed by 11:30. And I don't have to stay up until, you know, we don't have to be recording a podcast at 12:30 at night. With that being said, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. Tyler, anything else you want to say?
Just be on the lookout for our World Cup preview episode that I'm also excited about. I'm so excited to see you geek out about it.
Oh, it's gonna be a time.
And also just keep here for updates on the Zaxby's bag dropping investigation.
Sideline judgment. Investigation department is on it.
Yeah, and we're also be investigating the possibilities of a Chick-fil-A counter bag dropping.
Oh,
it's possible. It's something that we haven't considered before.
We may have to put a little sideline judgment branding on that Chick-fil-A dropping because we know where we stand on that side of the argument. But
yes, sir.
but yes, be on the lookout for all of our future stuff. After the World Cup episode, we'll be having some more special episodes. I'm going to go ahead and give that interview with my family as to what the World Cup means, what soccer means to other countries outside of the United States. I think it'll be a cool little roundtable interview type episode coming up. Tyler, we got our CFL appreciation stuff. And then, Tyler, we're in June. When the World Cup ends, we'll be in July. That's going to be time for some college football preview. We're back in our peak, yep. Man.
We're hitting our stride.
We're hitting stride, dude. We're hitting stride. There will be World Cup updates every single week. I know I forgot to mention that, but there will be updates every week. With that being said, Tyler, it's been a wonderful little episode. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
And we're not biased, but go Gators. Go soccer.
Go Gators.
Go soccer.
Go soccer.
Yeah. All right, bye.